This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, what's checking, everybody? It is a, well, it's a Monday overreaction show starring Jeff Ketchum and Anwar Richardson. Maybe starring is a bit much, but it is our Monday breakdown of Tom Herman's Monday press conference. And Anwar, you and I can kill an hour talking about anything. However, this wasn't a press conference that I come away with 10 different bullet points. It was pretty straightforward. There were questions about walk-ons. There were like 9 questions about walk-ons. There were weirdly no Eyes of Texas questions, which means you and I don't have to talk about that at all in this podcast. Because I wondered about that. I was like, God damn, what happens if 10 questions are asked and then all we have to do is a podcast reaction to the press conference and the whole press conference is about that. But since no questions were asked, no problem, no harm, no foul. I'll just ask you this. I guess we'll start with the elephant in the room. You asked the first, I think, the most meaningful, interesting question, the two most interesting, meaningful questions of the day. One, as it relates kind of off the field, the B.J. Foster issue, and we'll get into that in a second. And then I did think the run blocking question was an interesting question and answer as it pertained to what happened on the football field. Let's start with Foster.
Just jump in on this one, huh?
The last 24 hours is a bit of a weird one in that, and you can speak to this because you are the primary reporter on this, but we report that he leaves the game in the third quarter. Like less than 12 hours later, he's working out with his teammates. I guess it would have been like 14 hours later. And then he's got to meet with the coaches. But like in a span of 24 hours, I thought Tom Herman treated that like the most normal. I don't want to say he dismissed it because he like said, we're going to deal with it internally. Like there'll be punishment, blah, 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 blah. But maybe it just speaks to the year he's dealing with that happened. And I can't ever remember it happening in the 25 years I've been on the beat. And it almost seemed like it barely registered on his radar.
It was interesting. First of all, Ketch, I didn't really expect him to address it. To be quite honest, I was a little surprised that he did. I expected, internally, I was like, I'm going to get a standard, we'll handle this internally kind of response. And he just was like, happened. He was upset, heat of the moment. It happened and he apologized and, he'll serve his penance and we'll move on to be water under the bridge. And it's an interesting thing because to your point, Ketch, I have never heard of a guy walking out in the middle of the game. Now, have you heard about guys walking out in practice? Sure. Like that had coaches on my ass. People get upset. You ain't never heard of a guy packing up in the third quarter and leaving.
Like there have been guys that have refused to go into games.
Yes.
But that's not the same thing.
Dude was home and probably watched the fourth quarter of a game that he was just in. And it's amazing. And I guess if you're Herman, you're at this point, you're like, that's just par for the course. I mean, maybe this is the new norm. I don't know. But how many guys, Kutch, have gone into the transfer portal and come back this entire offseason? I mean, was Denzel Okafor went in and came back? Was it Anthony Cook in twice before
Juwan Mitchell.
Juwan Mitchell.
Cook. Anthony Cook, I think, officially did go into the portal for like 5 minutes.
Yes.
Wasn't he the one that went in for a day?
I think
like
he
a
went
day.
In for, yes. And then
he went
out.
In for a day, and the very next day he was out of the portal. You and I talked about this yesterday. I am stuck between two minds on this. There's part of me that wants to criticize Herman and be like, dude, is there nothing that you'll turn a kid away from? Like, but then again, if Tom Herman turned around to me and said, man, do you know what I'm dealing with in 2020? Do you know that Oklahoma almost canceled a game on Saturday because they didn't have enough warm bodies in one of their position groups? And, you know, they're not pushing the 85-man roster. They're below it. They don't have a ton of depth, despite the fact that Brian Davis asked, and I love Brian. I literally am only saying Brian Davis's name in this podcast and criticizing one of his questions because I think Brian, week in and week out, asks a lot of good questions. But in a press conference where Tom literally was talking about some of the areas where they lack depth, he got a big picture question from Brian that was asking about like all of the surplus they had in depth. And it was just kind of weird because it was like, well, they got a bunch of dudes playing wide receiver. But he literally just said they ain't got nobody at end. You know, he doesn't have anybody on the offensive line. You know what I mean? It was a weird depth question because it was spoken about in the context of like you've been stacking recruiting classes. And I was just thinking to myself, man, that would not be a question that Anwar and I could have got away with on Orange Bloods without some major. People would have been like, what do you mean, Anwar? Haven't you seen the offensive line? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I heard the question, and all I could think of is, we couldn't have asked that.
What can we do that everyone else can do? Like, people, and someone's going to think that's egotistical, but there's clearly we can't get away with that kind of
shit. Dude, I had, like, 9 people get on me overnight because I used the expression full stop on multiple occasions in my column. They weren't what I learned over like yesterday. I'm not going, woe is me. Trust me, everybody. I'm not doing that. But I'm matter of factly stating in columns where I don't give people reasons to get mad at the content inside the columns, they're going to get mad at the delivery of the content. All right. It was like, yes. They spanned the column. There was apparently nothing that they could be upset about. So they were like, son of a bitch, his delivery methods, that style of his stylistic approach. No, like, you know, there was a little bit of that. And all I could do was laugh. I promise I wasn't mad about that. All I could do today was chuckle when I woke up this morning. And there were like, at least there were more than a half dozen. I did screenshots on War of all the people that complained about me using the expression full stop. And I couldn't use them all on Twitter because Twitter won't let you tag 4 photos.
Wow.
So I had like 8 and I was just going to put them all. I was going to do a dump, but they only let me. I just chose the best 4. But there was a lot. Anyway, back to the press conference.
Yeah.
Well, I want to nitpick Herman.
Let me add in something.
Yes.
To the press conference. Man, when you start thinking about for a second what Herman has actually dealt with from a player perspective, it's been a lot. Like this goes beyond the normal. This is what you do as a coach. Like you go back to, you know, the pandemic, right? And having to deal with that. You go, actually start with transfer portal, guys coming in and out. Then you go pandemic, and he's not the only one, but you still had to deal with that type of thing and mental stress. And look, Ketch, we know about guys who behind the scenes, I mean, we're struggling from a emotional capacity, you know, fighting depression clearly, right? And, you know, there were some things that they had, that this staff had to deal with. They had to worry about, you know, when guys were home, were they eating? And were they getting food? Like, just proper nutrition. Like, that was a concern. And then he's dealing with the Eyes of Texas stuff. And then he's dealing with, you know, the things that are going on in the world. And the kids want to march down to, you know, the Capitol and about things that are going on in the world, right? So he has to deal with that. I mean, this goes beyond just the normal. Catch, this ain't something that somebody – you can prepare you for. Like, this is not, hey, you're a grad, you know, you're a graduate assistant, and this is, we're going to teach you how to be this type of psychiatrist. And so I'm sure by this point, like, what else can happen where Tom Herman is going to be say, well, that's unexpected. I'm guessing at this point he's like, huh, just par for this crazy 2020. Yeah, guy just walked off and just walked out of the game.
Let me tell you who he is. This is my movie metaphor of the day.
Okay.
He's Joe Brown trying to save Eastside High.
Yeah.
It's not enough that he's got to put the school on his back and lift up the test scores from like 12%, I don't know what 70%, whatever it was. He's got girls getting pregnant and having to take Sam's up on top of the building. And like, it's just one thing after another. Like it's not enough that he's got to have a successful football team this year. It is. It's all of this stuff. And again, so there's a part of me, Anwar, that wanted to take this BJ Foster situation and point it at Herman and be like, Tom, come on, man. This dude walked out on your team. Because where I come from, look, man, Anwar, if you and I played basketball at the park, like 4-on-4 basketball, and in the middle of a game to 12, like you were hooping on my team and you got mad about something when the score was 8-6 and you left, I never want to play ball with you again. Like, if I saw you at the park the next, I'd be like, forget that dude. Like, I want that. No. I don't want that dude on my team.
No.
And to think about it in the context of team sports, like there's just so many cliches about like, you never quit on your team and you hold the rope and you do, you know what I mean? Like we're just taught, like there's just some things you don't do. You don't quit on your team. And so I want to make this like a big thing. And I want BJ Foster to have as much happiness in life as possible. But there's just like a part of me that's like, you got to make an example out of that kid. And Tom's like, today is basically telling us, no, not really. No, I don't. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Actually, what I have to do is keep the depth at my safety position as good as I can. So I'm going to bring him back, and he'll serve his punishment, and he ain't starting anyway. So, you know, we'll punish him. But, like, yeah, no, actually, I don't have to make a big deal out of this. And you're not going to kill my buzz from Saturday by giving me this bullshit the day after. Like, I'm not going to let BJ Foster ruin my Saturday. And like I said, I'm caught because I'm like, fair enough.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm like, fair enough.
I mean, at the end of the day, he's, you know, then there's a flip side of it, right? Catch, the flip side is, okay, but he's also coaching young men. And this is the first time that BJ really, really had some sort of overreaction. It's one time, right? And at that point, you say, all right, so.
Well, he had the sketchy punch. He broke his hand in the, like, so yeah,
That was sketch.
To me, if you're selling the media, he broke his hand punching a car because that's just a strike. So it's cool. Like, I ain't kicking anybody. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. He broke his hand doing something. Whatever it is that he did is what he broke his hand. And it wasn't in practice. You know, it's like when someone tells that story, like he was in his truck and he was drinking beers and he fell off the truck. Okay, whatever. I mean, whatever your excuse is, we're like, we're men. Like, what, we can smell through that he fell off the truck and hurt it. No, okay, whatever. And then you like find out later on he was on a motorcycle and like hit a curb going 80. And yeah, we knew there was something going on there. To me, yeah. This is like, okay, BJ. BJ Foster just has to know Herman has done him a solid and giving him one major get out of jail card that is probably 50-50. Maybe Nick Saban gives him the same card. I don't know. Maybe Jim Harbaugh does the exact same thing. Maybe David Shaw doesn't, though. Maybe at Stanford you're out. Maybe Lincoln Riley in an isolated instance would go, I can't let that permeate. And I have the luxury of cutting you when maybe another coach would. I don't know. Like, I think BJ Foster caught a major break. And I think I said this yesterday on Twitter, and I'm not trying to kiss Herman's ass on this, right? I don't think of myself as a Herman ass kisser. I think Tom Herman makes mistakes. I think Tom Herman probably makes mistakes like every dude that's a dude, right? Like if Anwar and I are hanging out, I said something in front of Anwar in the last couple of months where I was like, oh, I don't know if I should have said that. Like in retrospect, like we all make mistakes. I'm conscientious of not making mistakes. And sometimes you make mistakes. I'm sure Tom Herman has made mistakes, but I bet if I'm Tom Herman, I got to feel like, these kids walk up to me in the locker room. They better know, man. I've given them. I won't say bent over backwards, but I've bent this year. I've walked with them in protest. I've supported them in a lot of endeavors, and guys have gone into the portal. Guys have walked out on the team. One thing after another, and I don't know of a single kid that Tom Herman has given up on. Is there anybody? Of all the things that have happened this year, I can't think of anybody that Herman has given up on.
I can't.
And all I'm saying is there's got to be some value in that. That I think this locker room at times has been slow to buy Tom the guy. But for me, Tom the guy's trying, because he could have told Denzel Okafor, nah, man, you're not bigger than the program, bye. He could have told Anthony Cook, I'm not sensitive to anything you're dealing with, bye. He could have told Juwan Mitchell, I can find a linebacker. Court Jacquez can start for. Like, he could have said a lot of things to a lot of guys. He could have told B.J. Foster, you committed an unforgivable sin. He's given all these dudes second chances in a way that's almost very Jerry Tarkanian-ish, in that I feel like Tom's about to earn himself a rip. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing at all. Like, if I were to die in 20 years from now and somebody was like, well, you know what they said about Jeff? He was the guy that people who needed second chances went to. That's not a terrible thing.
Yeah. It's Don't forget Myron Warren too, by the way.
Yeah. No, there's a lot. Myron Warren is the one that went in for a day and came out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for – I knew there was somebody else.
Yes, he was very quick. He was very quick.
I'm not kissing Tom's butt. I'm just making the observation that after this occurrence, this one more than any of the other ones, is proof that Tom is about giving these dudes chances. And if I'm one of those dudes that Tom hasn't given another chance to, I might cut him some slack the moment that he pisses me off over something, because I feel like he should be building up some credit with his team in terms of he's got our backs. I'm sure he makes mistakes, but man, he's been on the right side. I would imagine more times than the wrong side recently when it comes to support, because I sure can't count a lot of support times. That's it. That was my big takeaway from this press conference, was his answer to B.J. Foster was so much more. You know who he was on war? And I'll shut up. You and I, we've been married. We have married experiences. Yes. You ever have one of those situations with your wife where you've talked out in your head the right response, right? You know in advance the conversation that you're going to have because something either happened or is going to happen. And you're like, okay, in order for me to not get into a fight with my wife on this, I'm going to play it smart. And I'm going to say the smart thing. And you play it up in your head. Like, I got a plan. And then you see your wife and she says something that's a trigger of sorts. And then you forget all that smart stuff that you were going to say, and then you say the thing that gets you squarely in the middle of a fight. You know that feeling?
Yes.
I feel like Tom today was in one of those situations, but actually said the right thing. And so I came out of it thinking to myself, man, I wish when I'm in spots like that, I could act like that every time. Like I did. I walked out of that thinking Tom handled that really, really well, so much better than I think I would have, and so much better than I did yesterday. And this is exactly one of these situations where I tell myself I should be the better person, but I have a really hard time being the better person. And that's what it kind of reminded me of today. Like, I give Herman a lot of credit. Like, he could have banged a different drum, and I think he took care of that story in a way where tomorrow it's a non-story and B.J. Foster won't have to worry about the media talking about it.
No, he definitely did his guy solid. And, I mean, he could have thrown him under the bus. I mean, for sure. And here's the thing. Here's the thing, Ketch. If Tom Herman told B.J. Foster, you know, when B.J. Foster shows up on Sunday to work out like nothing happened, you know, Herman, he could have been like, hey, you out. You left. You don't have to be a part of this program. And there's not a single person, Ketch, that would have thought Tom Herman did B.J. Foster wrong. Tom Herman would have been within his right to say, nah, dude, you abandoned your team. You left us. You left us in the heat of the battle. These are your brothers, and you walked out because you're upset about playing time. Nah, selfish man. Go somewhere. Go to another school and fight for playing time and see how that works. If Tom Herman doesn't let BJ Foster back on this program, BJ Foster is at some small school somewhere next year. The big schools, the big programs, they're not going to risk anything on that guy. There's two things in life when it comes to sports, rather, that you can't be. You can't be a cheater and you can't be a quitter. You cannot do one. If you're known as a cheater, there's guys in who had Hall of Fame baseball numbers, catch. Those guys can't get in under the belief that they cheated. I looked it up yesterday, catch. This is what's crazy. I looked it up. Hold on. I'm going to look at it one more time because I'm going to be really exact about this. There's a guy who won 103 professional boxing matches. 103-16. You know who he is? Roberto Duran. Roberto Duran's record as a professional boxer, 103, 16 losses, 70 KOs. But you know what we know him for?
It's so unfair, too, because he was so great.
And that is all he is remembered for.
That was like 40 years ago. No mas.
No mas, because he quit. And the one thing you can't do in sports, you can't quit. You got to go out on your sword. You can get mad, but you can't quit. And so BJ Foster, if he's not in this program, catch, and he's labeled as a quitter, oh, he's done. He's arguably done in college football. Now, someone may give him a shot. But like I said, it ain't going to be the big boys. And so Tom Herman did that guy a solid, because he saved BJ Foster's career. Because if BJ Foster gets to go to the NFL in a couple of years, this is going to come up. And Tom has the opportunity to say, young guy, made a mistake, but he ended up being great for the program.
He'll be able to rebuild himself in a way that if he overcomes it, right, it'll be like one thing, but every day we had afterwards, yes, he was a model citizen. And yes, like, dude, coaches, it's funny. The people are like, NFL coach, if he can play, you know, yeah. The thing is, you have to be able to prove you can play before you can get away with stuff. So if he was an all-conference player already established, man, you can walk off the field anytime you want to, and you'll get another chance.
Yes. But
BJ Foster is an oft-injured player who hasn't done enough yet to think that, you know, that Ohio State, Michigan, and USC are going to offer him because they did when he was in high school after that. I'll just say this. BJ Foster made a potentially life-altering mistake/decision, and he caught a break, and the person that could have put the nail in the coffin cut him some slack, gave him a get out of jail card. I personally had one of those in my lifetime once. I was a senior in high school. I had been admitted into the University of Texas. I had one game left on my career as a football player, and I got into a situation where I accidentally set a football field on fire in the middle of a JV game where there were hundreds of people in the stands. Now, it's impossible to think that in 2020 I could have done that and been okay. That there wouldn't have been video, that it could have gotten that I wouldn't have suffered repercussions. But in 1993, I set a football field on fire and nobody had cell phones that could record the action, and like, it was a thing that happened, and I probably should have been suspended from school. I probably should have been sent to the school, like not suspended, like expelled. Like I should have been forced to go to a school with bad kids. You know, the kind that get expelled for arson. Yes. I should have never gotten into Texas, which means I never should have got into the UTSID office the next semester, which means I never should have ever had an opportunity to go down the road that eventually led me to orangebloods.com and the life that I currently live. That all could have went away if, after I set a football field on fire on accident, but nevertheless I did, my head football coach didn't look at my situation and think to himself, I'm going to cut the kid a break. Simple as that.
Yeah.
And he would have been within his right to be like, dude, you set a field on fire in the, like, we stopped the game to put part of the field out of fire. You can't be in the program anymore. And I would have been like, I get it. Damn it. But I get it. It didn't happen. And like, I do view this situation through the prism of like, I hope one day when BJ Foster's 40, he'll appreciate what just happened. He really will. But I bet he doesn't quite understand it at 21, what just happened. Because that dude showed up at weights yesterday like nothing had happened. That dude was on Instagram like wearing his UT football jersey, driving to school, making videos. And without the self-awareness that, you know what? You the key, they might lock you out. Like, that might be your scholarship.
Yes.
That might be like, you know what? You could have opted out and stayed on scholarship, but you don't get to walk out and keep it. So it's a huge learning moment. I tend to want to give Herman a ton of credit because at the end of the day, I think he saved this young man's life. Now it's up to BJ Foster to do something with it. Like, BJ Foster owes Tom Herman. Owes him, and not just because he covered for him today at the press conference in a way that by tomorrow we can unpin the BJ Foster pin thread and like it'll be kind of a dead story for a while. He still is around. So whatever happens in the BJ stories next, the next chapter, that chapter only is going to be able to exist because Tom Herman did for him what Pat Honeycutt did for me way back in the day, you know, and it's an interesting thing. Now, Anwar, let's change topics. Let's talk football.
Okay.
Not that there was a ton of football stuff, but I think we gave the BJ Foster thing more than its due. I thought Tom Herman answered your blocking question in the right side of the line, and what did you think of the line? I thought Tom Herman hit all the right notes when talking about the football stuff today. I think Tom's been prone to give into hyperbole at times. He didn't eat any cheese today. It's still a Parcellsism. I mean, he was asked about the offensive line. They were okay. And then specifically when he talked about the right side of the line, I think he specifically said they were just fine. Like, you know, like just fine. Okay. It can be better. And I kind of feel like he talked about his team in general in those tones. On the football side of thing, I thought everything that Tom Herman today said was spot on. No nitpicks whatsoever. No overreaction for me on an overreaction Monday.
No, I thought, he was definitely very, you know, the one thing about that I appreciate about Herman is that he doesn't really BS you really when he gives the answers. You know, answer, you know, I think to the best of his ability. I think sometimes he overthinks the answer, the question. And, you know, because I think Tom has a journalism background. So I think Tom is always thinking, what's the story?
Yeah.
And so because he's always trying to figure out what's the story, that sometimes throws him off as far as his answers are concerned. But as it relates to the offensive line, he was pretty honest. Like, it was okay, you know, nothing to write home about. And he didn't, you know, clearly they didn't have, you know, catch. I don't have the stats in front of me. They don't print out books anymore, catch, at the game. So I got to go look this up. But from a rushing perspective, it wasn't all that. They didn't really get a good, you know, surge from that line. And if it's a little concerning because Texas dominated in every facet of the game, but just about every facet of the game. But what you would have wanted to see and expected to see is, in the second half, a team that's just pounding it down the throat. And you know, we thought, like, you know, Bijan Robinson might have some long runs, you know, in the second half. And one of the questions I had in the podcast with Dustin last week was, could Bijan go for over 100? So it was okay, but we'll see how that progresses and what goes on from there, you know, going forward, because that area has got to be better. Like, as good as Sam is, you still want to have some sort of run game. But, you know, that stood out outside of the Kai Money questions. He did. I know you love those.
Hey, to credit to Tom, like, Tom didn't go overboard with Kai Money answers, because he could have really celebrated that kid having that moment. But I think he realizes, like, it ain't all going to be – that opportunity may not happen again the rest of the season. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to overcook the grits when it comes to that. And I appreciated the fact that Tom didn't give in to some question askers that kind of wanted him to. There's some Kai Money stories being written this week in state newspapers around the state.
Clearly.
Probably some TV stations around. I don't know. Everybody's doing a Kai Money story. And
yes,
it reminds me, we once did a story. I was doing a story at Cowboys training camp. You know how this is on where you're in training camp, man. You're just trying not to repeat. You're just, you know.
There's, yes, yes.
You're just trying to find something original.
It's Groundhog's Day after like week two or so, man.
We did this story on this kid named Odell Parks, who was this like rookie free agent that was kind of a star of camp. So we went to Dave Campo to get a quote from Campo. All we needed was Campo to just say, we needed the money quote, right? We needed his coach to just say, oh, he's looked great in camp. If he can just keep it up, like he's got a chance to make the team. It's all we needed. And we asked Dave Campo about Odell Parks, and he was like, I don't know. I don't know if he'll be here beyond a week. No, like, we didn't get a quote. They killed the story.
They killed it. You were done.
Parks story. I remember the kid's name because it's one of the only stories that I've ever worked on that I stopped on in the middle of doing the story because the person I needed to get a cheese ball quote from. I'm putting it on a tee. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Say something nice about a nice kid. And the coach was like realistic about it. Like, don't do this story, guys. He's not that good. And
it just
and done. I kind of felt like Tom didn't go overboard today with the Kai stuff. And it's kind of disappointing because that may stop a few stories from having 1,000 words. Maybe now they'll only have 400 words. But like, Tom's head's in the game, right? Like, I just – when it comes to the football stuff, I just felt like everything he said today, I was like, okay, yeah, I feel you. I don't feel – there's no part of this felt like a BS. No part of this felt like confirmation bias. Like, he – in the areas that I think he still has concern about, I don't think he showed up today pretending that they don't exist. He's got some depth issues at some pretty critical areas, and he outlined them. Like, we got into the second half of the game, and we're moving Reese Littell over – to a defensive end position that he hasn't played because he's only been playing the jack position, but we don't have bodies. But we like our depth at defensive tackle, but they probably don't like their depth at linebacker. They probably don't like their depth at the offense. You know what I mean? Like, he understands where injuries would create problems. And I just think in the big picture, now that Tom's in year four, he – didn't show up after 59-3 acting like he had accomplished something.
Yeah. And he said that.
Yes. And I don't consider myself a part of a media group that wants to see a coach flex after 59-3, but it weirdly felt like some people today were trying to see if he wanted to flex, because he could have, I suppose, and he didn't, and he remained very firm. I guess the only thing he didn't get into, nobody asked him the Big 12 question about how shitty the conference had been over the weekend. And, you know, so he started, like, when he talked about they're getting ready to take on the rest of the conference, he was like, now we've got nothing left but Power 5 teams. As if that means something. But, you know what I mean? Like, it was the only time that I saw him. And I get why he has to do it, but, you know, the reality is, they're going to play a lot of bad teams this year, and he's got to keep his team focused on. They need to keep their nose to the grindstone and show up and just be them. And I think that's as we get later into the season, I think this would be a good question to ask Tom, how successful, if this is something that they're either A, working on, and B, do you feel like you're pulling it off? Are you without saying it out loud on war, I felt like he was saying, we need to set a high standard, and we, every time we come out, we need to be hitting our standard. So when we play 9 Power 5 programs in a row, it ain't about who we play, it's about who we are. And it feels like the words coming out of his mouth to his team are about, come to work today, be good, be very Belichickian. You do your job. Control what you can control. And on game days, we do that for 60 minutes and let's just see what happens. And it's a very, I don't know the way to describe it, but it's I don't know that that's the approach they've taken, because they haven't played up to a high standard in his first 3 seasons. They do play down to their opponents way too often. And if this team's going to be a successful, this is going to be a successful season, they got to beat the crap out of Tech in 2 weeks. They got to start beating the hell out of teams that really and truly aren't on their level. Because if they go to Lubbock in 2 weeks and Houston Baptist throws for almost 600 yards against them, and then Texas can't replicate that, and Texas finds itself in a – I saw the stat on the Longhorn Network. 4 out of the last 5 games against Tech have been decided by 8 points or less. That should not happen this year. I don't care where that game is played. Based on what we've seen of these two teams early on, that game should be over in the third quarter. And in my mind, on war, it will be if Texas plays to a high standard and doesn't allow themselves to get sucked into a back and forth with an inferior opponent.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like 59-3 versus UTEP. I mean, you say it's UTEP, but, you know, we talked about that in a post game. At the end of the day, you still got to dominate them. And that's what they did. You go out, you kick their ass. That's what the Texans are supposed to do. And but then, yes, when you face a Tech team, and yet, well, sure, they're going to make adjustments, and technically they may be better. But I think if you're Tom Herman, and if you're Mike Yurcich, and you are Chris Ash, and you just checked around the Big 12 on Saturday – and you just saw Iowa State lose, and you saw Kansas lose, and you saw who was the other one team that
Kansas
lost?
Kansas State.
Kansas State lose, right, against the programs they shouldn't be losing to, even though Kansas lost to Coastal Carolina twice.
don't say they shouldn't lose to
them. And it shouldn't.
That's like saying Texas shouldn't lose to Maryland. Yeah, when it happens more than once.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So, I mean, but the teams that are there for paydays, those are the teams you should be beating down, you know? And so I think Tom was, you know, very, you know, he basically said they have bigger goals. And they understand that they have big goals. But, you know, Tom seems to be happy with this team, Ketch. Like, when you hear him talk, and you hear some pride in there, but he, you know, and he pointed, you know, a while ago to this being their year, but he seems to be really happy with the talent that they have, you know, whether it's at receiver, clearly quarterback, all across the board. You know, he one of the questions he was asked that was, you know, in the back to a Brian Davis thing, was about the depth and stuff that's there. And he seems to be pretty happy about what they've been able to build up. But when we start talking about big picture and what really counts and what really matters, look, let's just be honest. It's about beating all these other teams, but it's about beating Oklahoma and getting back to the Big 12 championship game. Like that's it. Hey, what it is.
Did Danny Davis ask about the quarterbacks? He asked a 2-part question. I don't remember Herman answering the quarterback question. He answered
he about JaQuindon. It was a 2-parter portion in it. He talked about JaQuindon. And so this is the tricky part now when we do these interviews, Catch, through Zoom. You're on mute. You get unmuted. And if John Bianco isn't paying attention, or Herman doesn't catch it, because remember, I asked the two. I said, "Hey, I got 2 questions,"
and he stopped and was like, "Hold on, there was a second part of the question."
Correct, and I had, you know, it had to be unmuted. So, so that's the hard part now, is that you only get 1 question realistically, and if it's a 2, so if you try to do a 2-parter, they may not answer. So it was not answered the backup question.
Okay. Cause it, that was the, when Brian asked that question about the depth, I wanted to hear, I thought, well, he may mention quarterback as one of the things depth wise that he likes, and he didn't. And then I think Danny asked, and then I think Seth asked a question. Then I think Danny asked the final question.
Yeah. Danny asked about the quarterbacks.
And it kind of dovetailed into what I wanted to see if he would say about Davis's question. And in the end, Herman just forgot. Not that he was going to say too much, but I was a little curious to see, not so much about Hudson Card. Really curious to hear what he thought about Casey Thompson's performance.
Yeah.
I thought Casey was really good. I didn't think Casey was out of this world, right? Like, I'm not going to show up on the Ticket City podcast on Thursday and be like, Alex, I agree, Heisman for Casey. Like, I don't know that. But I could see improvement, and I could see a player in there. Like, I said to myself, well, okay, well, if Hudson Card's going to win the job against him next year, he's going to have to be pretty good. They're not just going to give it to Hudson Card. So if they tell me Hudson Card is better than Casey Thompson next year, all right, that means he must be pretty good because Casey Thompson looks pretty good. Anything else? If we clear the decks, anything else that was in that press conference today that for your money we need to talk about?
I'm just kind of going through some of my notes from here. I mean, obviously, you talked a little bit about the seven receivers, but I don't think there's anything new in that. I mean,
Whittington's injury.
I was going to say Whittington. I was going to say Whittington being out for 3 to 4 weeks. Catch, some guys just struggle to stay healthy. I mean, and it just is what it is, and it's unfortunate. But some dudes just – there's something that happened. There's something with Jordan Whittington's body, and there's probably someone who's more advanced and understand things, and I don't know if it's because he's got too much muscle, right? And I don't know if he's got too many things firing – for him. But I mean dude didn't make it out of the first game of last year, and then he had the surgeries last season, and he had like a hamstring, and I think he may have a shoulder. Like, there's a running list of injuries that he had in the off season with non-contact. And
he's
then
in that BJ Foster category now.
I think he's worse,
you know, where it's just like, god, man, 10 man. And I hate to be like, I won't write this. I'm just saying it because you and I are having a conversation right now. But yeah, it is telling that we were almost an hour into this podcast and Jordan Whittington's name didn't come up. Like, I think we've almost processed that until he starts doing it and can stay healthy, there's no reason to go crazy.
No, I think anything you honestly catch. I'm at the thought process as it relates to Jordan Whittington. Anything you get out of him at this point is a bonus. I mean,
he's so talented, but because you can see him dripping with ability. But I mean, he touched the ball like 5 times and like on the fifth or the, like, the, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
And what's weird about him is he's not one of these guys. It's not like Sam, right? So Sam's got a little bit of an injury history, right? So we talk about Sam as a guy that he's got to prove this year that he can stay healthy over the course of 10 games. But Sam takes a beating. So when we talk about Sam's body breaking down, you start thinking about it in the context of like pro quarterbacks. Like, there's a reason why pro quarterbacks aren't – they like guys that are 6'4", 6'5", because they do take beatings. And in order to – like Colt McCoy as a pro quarterback, taking a beating. The thing about Whittington's injuries, it's not like one of these guys who's like BJ Foster, like whose body just may not be holding up to the rigors. It feels like Whittington's body's not giving him a chance to get started. And that's a big difference. There's a difference when your body can't hold up to the week in and week out punishment. And then there's a question of your body won't allow you to even ask that question of yourself. And that's where we are with Bijan right now. He hasn't had a chance yet to even prove that he can be on the field for 2 or 3 games at a time. Like, I'll always point to Jordan Shipley and say, look, man, Shipley tore his ACL freshman year, comes back next year, tears his hammy. First 2 years in the program, he lost them both, and then comes out and ends up being a 4-year starter and probably the best wide receiver in the history of the program. So there will always be a part of me that does that and says, oh, I'm not going to discount Jordan Whittington because of Shipley. But it also feels like I'm doing the Zach Thomas thing on War, where it's like, well, Zach Thomas was 5'10", and he played linebacker. So every 5'10 kid can play linebacker. You know, and what Jordan Shipley ended up doing actually is a one in a million anomaly versus everything else I've seen in 25 years of covering this program. I hope Bijan ends up being the second guy. But, man, it's tough to think that he didn't survive the first
half. You mean not Bijan?
I mean, not Bijan, but Jordan, sorry.
Yeah.
It's tough to think that Jordan Freudian slip there. Tough to think that Jordan didn't survive the quarter with ultimately what wasn't a non-contact situation. I mean, just there wasn't much in it, and yet he got up and you could tell something was wrong, and it was just like, oh God.
Yeah. I mean, you saw him limping. You're like, all right, well, how many weeks is this going to be? I mean, that's my instant thought was, all right, well, how many weeks is this going to be? And then when Herman said it's a knee, I'm like, all right, well, let's see if he plays again, you know? And so, you know, Herman's trying to put a positive spin on it. And, well, he'll be back for most of the conference games. But there's the skeptical side, like, but how many of them?
Well, and then somebody asked, I think it might have been Brian. I think Brian asked, do you think you'll have him back by TCU or Oklahoma? And you could see how Herman's face, like, he answered it like, I really don't know, 3 to 4 weeks. But if Jordan Whittington were really, really good and proven, he'd know. If that was Sam, right? And I was like, do you think you're going to have him back by Oklahoma? Well, that's the hope, right? 3 to 4 weeks, that's right up against, like, the question was asked, and Herman was like, I don't know. Didn't even really look that far ahead in terms of, like, what, like, that tells you, I think, a lot in that he was given the injury information, and the first thing Herman didn't do was look to see when he was going to get him back. I think Herman's moved on. I think one of the things Jordan Whittington's going to have to do the rest of the season is when he does get healthy, he's going to have to fight his way back into a crowded lineup because they do have a lot of receivers, and then he can't get hurt again. Like, this season has to finish for his sake with him coming back around week 5 or 6 and not being a major part of the offense, and then weeks 5 through 6 all the way through 10 and 11, he can't get hurt again. And he's just got to work his way in to where by the end of the season, you're like, okay. He played like a month and they did some stuff with him and he made it. And like, then you can start to take that next step of, okay, next year when they have to play a full 12 games, now he's got to take that step. But yeah, Jordan's still at the baby steps phase of his career. And it's really disappointing because that kid has so much talent, and that he's stuck on chapter one, I'm sure is incredibly frustrating for him.
It's gotta be. And you know, I'm sure, this dude from a recruiting perspective, I mean, this guy was a baller. I mean, I don't know where he ranked in your state rankings, but I'm sure he was top 25. At the very least, offense and defensive MVP in the state championship game. Never even heard of such a thing, you know? So this guy clearly has talent, but there is something that's going on where his body continues to betray him. And like, to your point, it does not allow him the ability to go. And, you know, I'm sure that's gotta be frustrating because it's, you know, this guy is be interesting to do the math on how many months he's spent rehabbing since he's been there. I mean, has he spent as much money more months rehabbing than he has practicing catch?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's crazy. And you know, if we just don't know now he's got another, you know, 3 to 4 weeks before he gets cleared. But you know, so now if you're Texas, you've got to figure out, okay, we do want him for the long haul. So you want that guy back in, but you know, at what point, at what cost, you know, we always talk about the, you know, that availability factor. Like, it's got to matter. It's got to mean something. Like, the guy's got to be able to play.
It's funny, Anwar, I'm looking at, because I was like, where did I rank him exactly in my LSR list? And I had Whittington as a 5-star prospect when it was all said and done, number 5 in the state. It's got to be, it's weird because Whittington, if you look at the guys in the top 10 of that year, there are 3 guys that I've really had a hard time. So you've got Jordan Whittington, you got Baylor Cup at Texas A&M, who was the number one tight end in the country, but has sustained one horrible injury after another, including one again in camp, to the point where I heard about Baylor Cup's most recent injury. And I just thought, well, that kid ain't ever going to play football again. Like, at some point I do worry about your ability to walk when you're 30, and Cup's kind of in that position. Whittington can't stay healthy. And then you've got Marcel Brooks who was a five-star linebacker who transferred from LSU to TCU. And when we talk about five-star guys, man, there are two big things. There's injuries, and there's just kind of like bad attitude. And we start looking at the top 10 guys. You've got DeMarvion Leal playing at Texas A&M. Garrett Wilson, not playing right now, but he's a star at Ohio State. Kenyon Green, star at Texas A&M. Theo Weiss, star at Oklahoma. You start looking at the guys that aren't panning out, and we talk about, like, why don't the top guys pan out? And it's very rarely not because they're not good enough. Like, if Jordan Whittington ends up being a bust, it ain't going to be because 25 years from now, when his name still gets brought up, it won't be because he sucked. It'll be because he couldn't hold up physically. And, you know, those things can be like 50-50 deals. I think people are shocked. I think people would be shocked by how many of these guys – the game takes its pound of flesh, man, from everybody. And it's just a matter of whether or not some guys get asked to give more than their 1 pound of flesh. And I would argue at this point, Jordan Whittington's been a guy who's given a few pounds of flesh. And at some point, like, it gets to be too much.
Yeah. I can't think of anything else that stood out for me, Ketch. I think those are kind of the main things.
I'm with you. That we did an hour just speaks of our volume, our ability to, like, just say a lot of words. Because I was heading upstairs to do the podcast, like, and I was thinking to myself, 30 minutes in and out. Like, today's podcast, 30 minutes. And who are we kidding? Like,
not going to happen.
This had been the Drunk Uncle, the music intro would have been 3, right?
Like, I feel like sometimes I should cut it down, but I'm like, like, it is a 2-minute intro. Like, it is the longest intro ever.
Now, the ladies love us for it, but when have we ever done anything in 30 minutes? And you and I.
Talk about it, big daddy. Talk about it. Our stamina is strong, baby.
If there's anything that you and I do, it's 30 minutes plus every time. For myself and Anwar Richardson, thanks for listening to our Overreaction Monday post Tom Herman press conference. We squeezed a lot of blood out of that turnip, and we'll do it every single week. We'll talk to you again next week when it'll be game week again. And presumably the topics will be quite different because, you know, players won't be able to walk out of games and stuff like that. Until next time, you guys be good to each other. Take care.